You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate
and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world.
And now, innovation thought leader
and your super fly host,
Tamara Kleinberg.
Hey, Launch Streeters, Tamara here, your innovation guide. And you know what? I'm just going to admit this to you. I really wished that I owned an orange VW van so I could travel the country in it. Wouldn't that be so cool? Huh. All right. Have you ever wondered how the greats do it? Yeah, me too. So that's why I had motivational speaker, business coach, and 11-time New York Times bestselling author Don Yeager onto the show. He actually began his career as a writer for the San Antonio Light and the Dallas Morning News until he became an associate editor for Sports Illustrated in 1996, where he worked for over 10 years, and he's been doing amazing things ever since then. This is a little bit of a different conversation, and he comes from a very different perspective, which is why I wanted to have him on the show, because he knows about greatness, but he knows it from a sports perspective. And I think that we can all agree that there's a lot for the rest of us to learn in those analogies and in those experiences. So I wanted to take us down a little bit of a different path, a little bit of a different mental path, in the hopes that that would open up new thoughts and maybe fire some new synapses for us as well. You know how I feel that intersection of random is so important for innovation. It's interesting. I think you'll like how he defines greatness in a way that actually includes everyday people like you and me. He's got this story, and it's in a book he wrote too, about the baseball player David Ross, which actually isn't about baseball at all. It's a story of perseverance, about being open to criticism, actually using criticism to move forward, actually fueling his momentum. And I think finding greatness in a totally unexpected way. I think the story that Don shares is one that we innovators really need to pay attention to. There are lessons in there for us as we fight legacy systems, try to get buy-in, push forward, just deal with all the things that is innovation. We also talk about his book, Greatness, and some of the traits of greatness, which, by the way, aren't all about talent. In fact, if at all, it's about a lot of little things that we all can do every single day. He also shares some interesting perspective on why we shouldn't celebrate our wins for too long, that's actually us trapped in the past. There's a running joke through the podcast that you'll hear about the guy that still has his high school jersey on the wall. I think we all know that guy, but the point being, like, hey, you got to move on at some point and get to the next thing. Also, pay close attention to how Don talks. So his innovator archetype is instinctual collaborative. And he's really leveraged his, I think, first of all, his collaborative side to build a successful business. I mean, that's what he's all about, right? As a journalist, and what he does about pulling disparate people, ideas, and experiences together to find the innovation and then bring that to us. And actually, his instinctual side allows him, I think, to see the patterns and the insights in the information. That's how someone like him is able to see those traits of greatness from a bigger perspective versus just a one-off here and a one-off there. And then, again, bring that to us in a way that we can leverage them. So listen for that instinctual collaborative as well. Okay, let's do this. Don, thank you so much for joining me today.
I am so grateful. Thanks for making time.
Oh, always. So I have to know, what's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
Probably that I play one instrument, and it is a ukulele.
I mean, how did you get into that? I have to know.
I was born and raised in Hawaii. So it's the instrument of choice if you're born and raised there.
Okay, so here's my question. Have you kept it up? And if so, why?
So I still pull it out and play every once in a while, mostly for the kids, because I have an 8-year-old and 9-year-old.
Because it's fun.
And they think it's fun. Like, they, you know, lots of other dads will pull out a guitar, but how many could pull out a ukulele?
So, I mean, one in a 10,000, maybe?
Right. So it's the only thing I do that can make my kids think I'm cool.
It is funny what I have a 9 and a 13-year-old, and it's funny what they think is cool versus what I think should be cool to them.
Exactly.
So I want to dig in. Your whole thing's around greatness, but I want to start with your definition of greatness, because to me, like in my space and innovation, it's one of those words that I think a lot of people use, but not everybody has the same definition.
Sure. Well, so greatness to me is truthfully, it's the pursuit of something. I argue all the time, you never really achieve it. And those people who think they have just begun a slow death. So I'm a big fan in the belief that greatness is an ideal. It's a pursuit, and it's a pursuit of excellence. It's an opportunity to try to say, what can I do to be better today than I was yesterday in the space that I want to, where I would love to be great. And so for me, whether that's writing or speaking, whatever it might be, I believe in creating a learning culture for yourself. And that's where my culture exists.
So here's my question for you then. This may be, I don't know, naive. Why keep doing it if you never get to it?
Well, because I think the idea of, I think anything that's, so I'm a big fan of a guy by the name of John Maxwell. John Maxwell has written a number of books, and it's just a really, and he has this, he says, anything worth doing is uphill, mm-hmm. right? And so I use that phrase all the time. Everything I want to do is uphill. Everything I want is a stretch for me. If it were easy and attainable, frankly, I probably wouldn't want it. I don't know why that's the case, but I'm wired to want to be a little bit more than I'm probably legitimately capable. And that means that that it gives me something to wake up for every day.
So this is a question that comes from one of our launch readers out there. His name is James Bailey. And I posted out there saying, hey, who's got questions for Don around greatness? And I think this kind of ladders onto what you're talking about now. His question was, basically, how do you have those aha moments? Meaning, how do you identify greatness? Or how do you know when you're in that place of that, I think, as you said, that pursuit of excellence?
Well, I think you know it when you, so for me, the aha is often, I find myself in the presence of people who are closer to the ideal than myself quite often, because I get that blessing as a journalist, right? It's an opportunity as a writer at Sports Illustrated and the author of a bunch of books. I get to be around really extraordinary people, and just the thing that strikes me about them is their willingness to not be satisfied. And, you know, I think human nature says we get to a certain place, we tell ourselves great work, we pat ourselves in the back, and then it gets tough to wake up the next day and say, I want more.
Yeah.
And so to me, I think the aha moment for me over the course of time has been, I limit self-congratulatory moments to very short windows, but I know people who are still partying because they graduated from college. Right? I have friends whose high school football jersey still hangs in their house.
I know that guy. I know him.
Right, and I think that what you find is that those people who find themselves trapped in some place where they have, where they've already celebrated an achievement in a way. And again, I'm not against the idea of celebrating achievements, but I think the really great ones celebrate them for a really short window and they move on, right?
So can you train yourself to get away from the, okay, I go to bed, you know, feeling like nailed it, and then waking up the next day and being like, I'm done, into the going to bed feeling like I nailed it, and then waking up the next day and wanting more? And, you know, part of this is I'd heard you say something that made me think about this, which is that, you know, the characteristics around greatness are culled from some of the greatest winners in sports, as you said, and being a journalist, but not a single one requires you to be able to touch your toes, which thank God for me, because I'm not quite there on any given day. But does that mean that I can train myself to be in that pursuit of greatness, or is it just some people have it and some don't?
So I completely argue that we can all pursue it. right? That the beauty of it, that's the thing that I loved about this discussion as I've had it with even high achievers, right? Was this belief that, that there is, greatness is available. So another phrase that I use is that greatness is available to all of us if you're willing to do, because the great ones will share this with me often, that you have to be willing to do common things uncommonly well. So most everybody I know wants to hit a home run. You want to have a New York Times bestseller. You want to do whatever it is, right? That you think you've created this ideal that if I've done that, I've achieved greatness. But the truth is that the real great ones will tell you it's about doing the little things every day, right? Mm-hmm. And to use a baseball analogy, and again, sorry, I use sports analogies a lot. It's my life. Some people just want to hit a home run every time they step up to the plate. And if they don't hit a home run, it's a bad, it was a bad at bat. It was an unfulfilled moment. The truth is the really great ones are just hitting singles all day long, right? They're just doing the little things that other people don't want to do. And in doing that, when the home run comes, it's part of a consistent effort to just perform, to perform at their very best every day in every opportunity they have.
So I think, and bear with me if this question is a little bit jumbled because it's kind of floating in my head as you're talking. Do you think that those that are in the pursuit of excellence, that are in greatness, are setting milestones that are more around doing the heavy lifting versus the outcome? I mean, what I'm trying to say is, when I look at people who set goals, right, we often set, like, to your point, I want to hit a home run. I want to knock that presentation out of the park. I want to hit $1 million in my business. But what I hear you saying is they're not focused on the $1 million or the presentation or the home run. They're focused on, okay, let me check off all the actions I have to do today to eventually maybe get there.
Correct. Absolutely. There's not a single great coach I've ever worked with that sat down and said, my season will only be a success if I win a national championship or a Super Bowl or a World Series. No great coach ever sits and says, what they will say is, we will have succeeded if we collectively improved on a daily basis, right? If we found a way to make that, to find that place where improvement can be had, and we chased it with abandon. And so that's that's why I love this discussion with you, especially, is that, what we're here talking about is that innovation, right? That concept of trying to go out there and recreate and change that is really available to us while we're dreaming big, right? We're imagining big, but we're doing small to get there, right? Because if you forget the fundamentals, if your dreams are so big that you're not achieving or taking care of the fundamentals, I don't think you'll ever achieve the dream.
Well, I think you're right. And I think that oftentimes with innovation in particular, it's about all the little things that add up to make the big things versus trying to go for just that big thing out of the gate.
Yeah. And how many people are there that we know that say, gosh, who are living what we would argue are kind of unfulfilled lives because they are stuck, just as they're stuck. Some people are stuck with that high school jersey on the wall. These folks are stuck with a dream that they keep telling themselves, gosh. And then one day they wake up and somebody else has created that thing they were talking about. And they were, oh, man, that was my $1 million idea. Right.
Right. And then it was somebody else's.
And then it was, but what did you do between the time you had the idea and the time you complained that someone else did it to have executed on the idea? And the truth is, it is about a continual pursuit. That's what, it's not just about having the end in mind. It is about doing what it takes to get to the end. And that's what greatness, the pursuit of greatness is.
So what do I do if I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, oh my God, Tondre, like I'm over here. If only I had the resources, if only I had the time, or if only, right? That's usually where those sentences start when you're stuck. What do I do? What's the first thing I need to do to get unstuck and put myself on that path?
I love that. Perfect question. So the number one answer. So the greatness discussion, when we have it, for me, it is the culmination, not the culmination because it continues today, but the writing of the book was the culmination of 2,500 interviews I did over the course of a 25-year career, interviewing the very best of all time and asking them, what did you do that separated yourself from other people? And the number one answer that came up, they learned to hate losing more than they love winning. Yeah. They want to win, yes, but failing is what keeps them. It's the idea of avoiding failure that really drives most of them. And they will tell you the way you do that, the way you learn to hate losing, is you stop making excuses, right? If only this had happened, if only I had the resources, if only I had gotten that job. If you can find someone to blame every time things don't go your way, Michael Jordan once said to me, a loss is not a failure until you make an excuse, right? And the challenge that most of us have is we spend far too many cycles in an excuse mode, right? We have a reason for everything that doesn't go our way. The truly great ones have long since stopped making excuses, right?
Yeah.
They say, you know what? I didn't get that job, but I'm going to figure out why I didn't. What was it about the way I presented myself, or what was it about what was it that kept me from that, so that I can improve on that as I go looking for the next opportunity? And they are breaking down losses in different ways than most people. Most people use them as the nails, you know, to build a coffin of failure.
Right. And they're using, can I be cheesy for a moment, to build a staircase, right? They're going in the opposite direction. Was that so cheesy? I probably should never try to jump on other people's analogies.
That was so wonderfully cheesy. That was so wonderfully cheesy. I'm using it. You will be my quote of the day one of these days.
That's great. I want to unpack that a little bit too, because I think as you're telling that and sharing that, I mean, it's so powerful to think of, God, all I have to do is stop making excuses. I mean, it's so obvious and so hard at the same time. And what I sometimes see with people is they actually do these subtle moments of self-sabotage where they say, well, if they have let's call it a big presentation in the morning, just something super simple, right? That they need to nail to get the resources they need to go after that big initiative, whatever it is. Or maybe it's in their personal life, the big dream they want to go after. So then they, what do? They drink too much the night before in a self-sabotaging effort to not get enough sleep, to then wake up feeling tired. And then the excuse is, well, I didn't get it because I was tired. Like I had too much wine the night before while I was going to bed. And I know that's a really weird example to give, but my point being that I think oftentimes, and I'd love to get your perspective on this, that not only do we make the excuses after, but we sometimes do these funny little self-sabotaging things along the way, hoping to have an excuse later. Does that make sense?
Totally. It's exactly why I scheduled this interview for the afternoon. I'm just joking.
I was like, wait, why? Because you drank too much. Got it.
I didn't want to have
well played,
an excuse.
Don. Well played.
No, but to your point, so it is the real challenge here, and this is where the rubber meets the road, right? It's great to have this concept. You hate to lose more than you love to win. It's great to have this concept. They stop making excuses when they don't get what they came for. But so what's the action item? What's the way that you – how do you actualize this concept? And the first piece is you regulate, and you are intentional and conscientious about the narrative – that you have with yourself, with other people, and the narrative you let them have with you when you don't get what you aspired to, right?
Right.
If you have friends who are sitting around and saying, well, of course you didn't get it. You were tired, you know, but you know what? That was a good time at the bar last night. Then what you should be listening to right there is, number one, I let a friend just make an excuse for me. Not a good example of what that's not the model I aspire to, because I realize making excuses keeps me from being exceptional, right? If you know that, and all of us should, right? All of us should know that when we make excuses, we're immediately limiting our potential. And so if that's true and you acknowledge it and you know it to be true, then regulate yourself. If you find yourself, in fact, tell people around you, if you hear me make an excuse when something doesn't go my way, call me out for it, please. Like, I need help here. I've done it, right? I've had that exact conversation with people who are very close to me, and it is a game changer. Because if you have people, if you don't speak it, at a certain stage, you do start to reverse what you think about these things as well.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think we always, what I appreciate, Don, about what you're saying is you're not blaming your friends or your inner circle for pulling you down. You're saying to them, hey, I'm trying to step up. And I think oftentimes we say, well, you know, I'm surrounded by mediocrity, which could be true, but it's up to you, right? To decide, hey, that's not what I'm going to go for anymore.
Yeah. In fact, so the number two answer that came up in this, what a good transition.
Excellent. I do my best. I try.
Second most popular answer that came up in that 2,500 interviews that I mentioned to you is that they surrounded themselves by people who were looking to achieve what they were looking to achieve or more. Mm. Wanted to be around people going in a direction. So I had John Wooden was this great basketball coach. He won 10 national championships at UCLA. I had the unbelievable good fortune to have a 12-year window where every other month for those 12 years, I flew to California to spend a day.
Oh, that's incredible. He's the master.
And so I have 500 hours of recorded conversation between the two of us. Incredible gift that he gave me over that time. But one day he was talking to me about the value of my associations, right? What do those people around me look like? And he said something. He said, you will never outperform your inner circle.
Oh, wow.
So if your answer is, I'm surrounded by mediocrity, don't be surprised if you're mediocre, right?
Yeah.
Go change your circle, and you can do that. I've done it. I have intentionally changed out time I spend with people. And that doesn't mean some people in your life are there because they're family or there's some other reason you have to be in their presence, but that doesn't mean you have to give them all your time, energy, and effort. Right? Yeah,
I've had to work really hard lately in the last couple of years, I'd say, to do that. And it felt awkward and painful in the beginning. But now that I've made that transition, I cannot tell you, I mean, you're so right. You don't outperform your inner circle. So it's made a huge difference in my life to change out where and who I spend my energy and time with, for sure. And it's hard, but it works. I want to ask you a different side of this. We've been talking about what's that first step to get unstuck and getting rid of those excuses. And you said something else that made me smile and panic all at the same time. And that was chasing it with abandon. And that to me sounds like, yeah, oh my God, I'm in it to win it. This is amazing. Yes. And then the other part of me goes, oh, how do I do that? Oh my God. What does that mean to chase with abandon?
Well, what it means is that you, again, I think we should all be looking to stretch, right? So what is it? What is, in my space, what does exceptionalism look like? What do I aspire to? And then now, I'm not going to sit back and hope it happens. I'm not going to sit back and dream of what that is. I'm going to have action. I'm going to have things I want to measure myself against. I'm going to be and each one is going to press me to be uncomfortable, right? And I'm going to learn on that journey how to be comfortable being that, right? Being uncomfortable. And so so abandonment for me, I wanted to be I retired from Sports Illustrated, and I know you weren't asking a specific as it related to me, but I retired from Sports Illustrated and took an early retirement package, decided I wanted to write one book a year. I've now written 27. And I wanted to do public speaking. Now, I had never been a public speaker before, so I was going to step outside my comfort zone. And I went out and I hired coaches to work with me. I went and every time I spoke, I arranged to have it videotaped so I could review my speeches like game film. I mean, I wanted to, again, I keep using athletic references, sorry. But I wanted to get better. And I sought feedback religiously. We have a saying in my office. We say feedback is the breakfast of champions, right? And but don't just go asking people to tell you how great you are. Ask the question in a way that opens the door to say, I am truly looking to become great in this space. Can you help me? Would you tell me what you saw, what I could have done, anything that would improve the experience that you would have had if I'd done it, so that I can give that to the next person? I'm open. I'm a sponge. I get just how you ask for feedback is so important. So when I talk about abandon, for me, chasing it with abandon is about a belief that I want one day to be really, really good in this space. And there's all these things I have to do to get there. And I do them every day.
Well, what I really puts me at ease, for lack of a better way to say it, about what you're saying, if I hear you right, Don, and tell me if I'm wrong, is you don't have to do it alone in a vacuum. And in fact, you shouldn't. And you should get that feedback and those conversations and that advice. And that's how you figure out what to do. Because for me, I think, and a lot of listeners out there, when I talk to them, it's well, okay, I want that, but now what do I do? Like, how do I put that into action? And maybe that is a great transition into talking a little bit about those 16 habits of greatness that come out of your book, which I think you referenced earlier, also called Greatness. And tell me if I'm veering off the wrong track, and you need to answer this differently. Can you share some of those habits, and maybe even perhaps some of the more surprising ones that would make us go, oh, if I do that, I'm on the path to greatness?
Well, sure. I mean, I will tell you. So we've already covered kind of two of them, right? We covered number one and two. The first one was that they hate to lose more than they love to win. So they have learned long ago that excuses are the one thing that keeps you from achieving full potential. So
can I, hey Don, before you go on, can I share something with you on that I think highlights that? Because that really spoke to me. And one of the reasons why I really wanted to get you on the podcast is about this hating to lose. I'm a CrossFit addict, so I go religiously at 5 o'clock in the morning. I am in the CrossFit Open, which is the global competition that everyone can participate in. And I'm 45, and I only came to CrossFit at 41. So my goal is to stay in the top 100 in my region of women my age in Southwest. And what's interesting as I've been tracking this is people keep saying to me, Tamara, you're not going to regionals. Don't worry about it. This is only for fun. It's all about fitness. Like those kind of, you know, people trying to help me maybe justify what my results are or aren't. And what's funny, what I came to realize in all this is I don't like to lose and I want to win and I'm going to be okay saying that. So, and for me, winning is not being number one. For me, winning is staying in top 100. But it's been really interesting to uncover my own hate of losing in this situation and to see how people react to that.
And it's funny because, again, there are a lot of people who go, oh my gosh, well, you just got your priorities wrong if right. You hate to lose. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Because if you're okay with losing, then by the way, I don't know that I don't know that I want to spend that much time with you. I want to be, and so that actually plays in the second one, which is your inner circle, right? Evaluating your inner circle regularly because you're never going to outperform them. What do they look like? Are they people who have aspirations like you do? Are they people that are dragging you down every time you're with them? Is there drama in everything they do and you find yourself emotionally exhausted by the time you're done with the conversation? By the way, doesn't mean you have to leave this person completely in the dark, but maybe find a few fewer lunches to have with them, right? Pick other people and start changing your circle. That's the second one. You know, another one that's really impressive to me is the idea of visualizing victory, right? About seeing success. So, you know, you talk to any one of these amazing champions and they'll tell you that they have gone through the mental exercise of visualizing what success looks like for them and putting themselves visually in their mind in the place to feel what that's like. And literally some of them, Serena Williams is so good at it, right? I mean, here's a woman who, if you watch her before the finals of any tournament she's playing in, you watch her in the 3 minutes before she takes the court, the last, you know, for her last few swings of practice, She sits on a bench with a towel draped over her head. And if you were to look under the towel, you would see her with her hands in front of her cradling the trophy, right? She is preparing. She's physically putting herself in a place to visualize and experience what victory is going to look like and feel like. And that ability, you shared some negative examples of self-talk, right? These people understand the power of self-talk. We almost would never say to other people in a tough moment what we say to ourselves.
Right.
We tell ourselves
we're
all the time,
so mean to ourselves.
Oh my gosh, you are such a louse. How did you do that? Would you have said that to somebody else who failed in a similar moment? No, of course not. So these people have mastered this concept. They understand the importance here of what we say to ourselves. They understand what it means to see success and visualize it. They talk about the importance of how to manage failure, right? They use adversity as fuel is a phrase that we use all the time. When something really bad happens, it doesn't send them to the couch to curl up. It doesn't, you know, they're sitting there and saying, all right, what do I do with this? And what do I do with this that will result in an outcome that I might not have achieved if not for this, right? So they're looking at adversity that way. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, so did you read my mind? Did I make a noise? Is that how you knew?
Don read my mind.
It's amazing. Yeah.
So, well, that's number 17.
Read minds.
Yeah.
I'm going to use my limited football analogy because if you got CrossFit football or boxing, I'm in. Everything else you're going to have to explain to me. So, you know, oftentimes I found this is a subjective statement, so you can totally tell me if I'm wrong. But, you know, you watch the NFL football season and you have these incredible undefeated teams and then they go into the Super Bowl and they bomb. And I've always said that, you know, if you look at the winners in the Super Bowl, they're usually the ones that are really hungry and that have had some adversity through the season before getting there. It seems like the ones that coast by the time, and could not coast, they did work hard to get there, but who didn't have that painful loss along the way, don't win the Super Bowl. And I'm just wondering, as you're talking about how you deal with failure, if there's something that we need in that adversity that we don't get when we're coasting.
Absolutely, because I think one of the greatest, most underappreciated muscle is the muscle of resilience, right? It's that ability, and resilience requires just as resistance, you know, is required to build a physical muscle. Resilience is required to, you know, to build that mental muscle, right? You have to be able to process and move beyond failure quickly, right? I mentioned earlier, you know, that we were talking about how do you wake up after you've had a really great day, nailed it, and say, I want to nail it again. Well, just as you want to have a short memory around how do I wake up that way, you also need to have a short memory around failure, right? You have to. There's a big piece of this entire discussion is about being better in the moment, and few of us are. Human nature means that we sit and we wallow in things for far too long. We celebrate things far too long. The key to all of this discussion is understanding the requirement, exceptionalism, which is to defy human nature, right? You have to say, I know my nature is to be this, to be that. Today, I'm committing to defying human nature, right? And I'm going to step away from what those the typical habits that I have exhibited in my past are, and I'm going to be different and better today.
Do you find, particularly with the failures or maybe even the wins, that actually just taking that moment to reflect and maybe even taking the action of writing down what you learned helps you move on? Like doing something, you know?
Absolutely. I do. I have a whiteboard for exactly that. That's a great, I do. If I've like had, if I just experienced something that was extraordinary and something great has happened for me that is a mile marker somewhere along my journey, I'll write it down. And then, you know, and then I, cause again, I'm not against the idea that you shouldn't have reminders of your success on your wall. High school jersey, maybe a little much, but the idea of the, you know, having some things there that you can celebrate or things that might have been painful. And then trying to say, I love the military model of after action reports, you know, where after every mission, they sit down and, you probably know this story. You know, it doesn't matter what your rank is. Specifically, the example I'm using is in the Air Force. All insignias come off the uniform, and everyone has an opportunity to weigh in on what we learned in the moment. Right in the moment of the mission, what did we learn? What would we improve? What would we do different? And everybody gets a chance to weigh in on that. Whether you're the general or the you know, or the when you're the lead pilot, or you're the person that fueled the plane, you have an opportunity to weigh in on the mission. And I think that that's a really important place for us, because we too often. I want to say you should spend a limited amount of time, but yes, you have to do it. And writing it down is a great example.
Yeah.
Is a great.
Well, I just think it's funny as you're talking, I was thinking, you know, we don't spend what we don't do often when we win is actually deconstruct that. Like we get all excited, we celebrate, we have cake, we have our jersey on the wall, but we don't, in some ways, I think it's helpful to treat failures and successes the same way. So that's an outcome. What did I learn? Because I think for successes, right, you want to do more of what works for you too, but you have to take the time to figure it out what you did.
So true. Absolutely. And I love that, treating failures and successes the same way.
So I want to switch gears a little bit and ask you about your other book, because it's all kind of, I think all kind of comes into greatness. But tell me about David Ross, who he is, and why you wrote a book about him called Teammate, right? Did I get the title right? And by the way, for our listeners, we'll put the links to both of the books and everything else in the show notes. So don't worry about trying to pull over and write it down. We got you. But tell us about David Ross and why he was bookworthy, what you learned.
Thank you. No, he, it's actually, it may be among my favorite books. So several years ago, I've known David Ross for a number of years. I mean, this is a guy, he spent 15 years in the major leagues playing baseball. 13 of those years, he was a backup, right? He was a reserve player. But he had this small window of time halfway through his career when he was the starter on a baseball team in Cincinnati, the Cincinnati Reds. And he and the new manager, they had a new manager that came in and they didn't get along, and it happens again. I love sports stories that are relatable to all the rest of us.
Yeah.
Right? And we've all had managers who have come in and taken over and we don't get along with them.
I mean, isn't that something like most of us quit because of the managers or bosses?
Exactly. Well, David Ross didn't get a chance to quit because the manager fired him.
Oh, there
right?
you go.
Cut him from the team. And so here's this guy, he's a professional baseball player. There's a limited number of jobs in your space, and he just lost one in baseball. But as it happened, a team in Boston, the Red Sox, needed a third string catcher. So they signed him. He goes from being a starter to the third string, and he's there for just a couple of months because they're in the playoff chase. And at the end of that window, the Red Sox have lost. They're not going to win the World Series. And the general manager of the Red Sox pulls him into a room and says, David, I want you to know that we're not going to sign you next year. We don't need you next year. But you should know that your reputation in baseball is that you're a me first guy. You're a bad teammate. Mm. And
I mean, how many times has ego killed a career?
Right. But how few times has a leader had the guts to tell you the truth?
That's true.
Right.
Yeah.
So this leader looked at him and said, I'm telling you, here's the deal. We're not bringing you back next year, but it's not because of this. It's not what we saw. But here's what your reputation is. And reputations in this business die hard. David Ross goes home, and instead of arguing, instead of blaming the manager who fired him, instead of whatever, he actually sits down and he goes on a journey to learn how to become a better teammate. And he actually makes it, he gets picked up by the Atlanta Braves as a backup again, but he makes it his goal. He opens up a whiteboard in the locker room and starts asking everybody, what is a good teammate? What does a great teammate look like? What do they do? How do great teammates serve others? And he starts building a list, and he begins this journey of making himself into a great teammate, which is which was to me the number one lesson I learned here, because I think often of great teammates being people that we just assume you were raised right, or, you know, you grew up with the right kind of coach. Truth is, we can learn how to become great teammates. David Ross went on this journey. He becomes so good at it, at being in service of other people in the locker room, right? He wasn't any better of a player on the field, but he was better in the locker room, to the place that when his contract expired in Atlanta, half the teams in baseball were on his doorstep to sign a contract. He chose to go to Boston, signs a contract there, wins the World Series with the Red Sox. Contract expires there, signs a contract to go to the Chicago Cubs, where 2 years later, in his last at bat in baseball, he decided 15 years was enough away from his family. He was retiring from the game. He announced it at the beginning of the season. They go into Game 7 in the World Series. In his last at bat in baseball, he hits a home run.
Oh my gosh!
To help the Chicago Cubs end a 108-year curse and win the World Series. And when the game is over, he is standing on the sidelines being interviewed by a television crew on live national television. When right in the middle of an answer, his teammates come over and they lift him on their shoulders and they carry him from the field.
Oh, stop! That's so good.
It's not because he was a great player. It's because he was a great teammate.
Well, and if I hear you right, I mean, he was always a good player or a great player. He wasn't a good teammate until he decided to make that change.
Correct. And in fact, he wasn't ever a great player. He never led his team in any category. He was, in fact, so one of the things that, one of the phrases we learned, we used in the book and then in the speech that I do around the subject, is that David Ross learned how to become invaluable without ever being most valuable. And he did so by committing himself to making other people better. And you know what? That's an undervalued, underappreciated skill set. And if we can do it, if we can become that, and we can, that's the best part about it, right? Like, will I ever hit a home run in Major League Baseball? No. But I can learn from David Ross how to make the people that work with me better. And that should be if I do that, I'm creating a championship atmosphere.
What I, you know, feel so turned on my head about just hearing the story is, I think we oftentimes talk about how do we be a great leader? And then sometimes we marry that with being humble, being a servant leader, whatever. But it's still very, how do I put myself in the spotlight? Which is a very different conversation than how do I be an invaluable part of a team? Which, to your point, I think whether you're in baseball or in an office with six people or an office with 5,000 people, that's what we're all part of as a team, right? So I think it's such an interesting and different view on how you make yourself invaluable.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, so in the last year and a half, the book came out. The irony of it is we started work on this book before the season that the Chicago Cubs won the World Series. So we had no idea when the book started. The book was about how to be a better teammate. It wasn't about winning a World Series with the Chicago Cubs. It wasn't about being carried off the field. It wasn't about any of those things. But all those things happened for him, right? And so it obviously makes the book better. But I've been doing corporate speaking engagements about what does it mean to create an environment where we have a team of teammates, right? Where we have a team of people that want to support each other, that want to make each other better. And in those environments, I ask in advance, name for me three employees, three people in your operation who never get celebrated, never get the new parking, the best parking spot. They don't get called to the stage, but without whom you could not be successful. And then I bring those people, I call them out, right? I celebrate them during the speech. And I've had, almost every time I've done it, I've had one of those people come up, tears in their eyes going, you know what? No one's ever said thank you for being a great teammate till today.
Right.
Thank you. And I realized what a failure that is in us. We everything is always about our high performers. And I like that, right? You obviously heard that's a topic I love to discuss. But I love this one as well, because this is about how we build teams.
That's really cool. And I have to say, we just had a full circle moment, Don. I'm really excited. Are you ready for it?
Give it to me.
Okay. This is very exciting. I love it when like the bookends come together. It's awesome. So
does it have anything to do with you drinking all night long?
Shh. Come on now. I'm only on my fifth cup of coffee. So you were just talking about writing the book, and they hadn't even won the World Series. Like, that hadn't even happened. It wasn't about the outcome. And in the beginning, we were talking about that in that pursuit of greatness, that you focus on the actions that you have to take every single day, not the outcome. So here you are writing this book, and this, you know, this guy, David Ross, is taking the actions every day. It wasn't about the home run and getting carried off the field. That happened as an output of the hard work you were putting into writing this book, he was putting into baseball, and then all of that came together for the outcome.
That is a full circle. But let me add one more twist to the circle. So as soon as that season ends, David Ross signs on to go be on Dancing with the Stars.
Ah, it's my dream.
Where he finished second. He finished second in last year's Dancing with the Stars. And not because he's a good baseball player, but because he's just the kind of guy that America kept voting for. Because you can't help but love this guy. So, yes, his full circle came with Lindsay Arnold as his dance partner. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. So I want to layer on some innovation into this, innovative thinking, because our listeners, our great community, these are innovators. These are people in companies, entrepreneurs, trying to go out there to do great things. How do you think that stepping into your greatness or getting into that mindset of being in that pursuit of excellence helps you bring more innovative thinking and results to your work in life? How are those two connected?
Well, I think it's connected, because to be an entrepreneur, we'll start with entrepreneurs first. And to be an entrepreneur, you have to be willing to take risks. You have to be willing to seek feedback. If you're not doing all those things, you will be a short-lived entrepreneur, right? Your lifespan in that profession or that space will be limited. I would argue that's the same thing among innovators. You have to be the great innovators, the great minds, the great thinkers who are out there trying to change their world, whatever it might look like, right? Are those who are capable of also looking very critically at their work and being able to understand the importance of development, right? Of moving up. Great ideas don't get you anywhere.
Yeah.
It's the
implementation.
It's the execution, the implementation of those ideas that separates, you know, it's how Albert Einstein takes 10,000 light bulbs to make one that works, right? But I guarantee you that after every failure, he wrote down a little note, just as we talked about, right? He was figuring out what it is that how am I gonna make this vision that I have for this product successful? And it does. I think there's a complete intersection here.
So before I go on to my last question, where can people go to connect with you and learn more?
DonYaeger.com, DonYaeger.com. But knowing that a lot of people misspell my last name, I also own the website, Don Yaeger, spelled YEAGER.
That's great.
So, DonYaeger.com, all the contact and data is there. And, we love, part of the reason I love podcasts like this is just the opportunity to find my way into communication with audiences and with groups of people that I might not otherwise ever get a chance to touch. So thank you.
Yeah. And I just, I find that, as I said, is these are all innovators looking to, you know, take something to the next level and ignite change. And I think this conversation around being in that pursuit of excellence and of greatness is a mindset you need to make those things happen. So with that, my last question is, what's the one piece of advice you have for launch readers out there that are trying to do just that, ignite change, get into that pursuit of greatness?
Well, I think we touched on it a little bit earlier, and I know you even mentioned how difficult this piece of advice was for you as you went to Activate on it a couple of years ago. But this concept about governing and paying attention to your inner circle, right?
Yeah.
Who it is that you give your time to, who do you surround yourself with, and seeking out people that might not naturally be in your inner circle, but you know could help you and your mindset continue to grow and flourish. Go ask that person if they for lunch, for coffee. The truly great ones are open to those conversations. They're open to being engaged with other people who are like-minded. And so if you've identified others who can be influential to you, take this as your hall pass and go use it as a reason to reach out and ask those folks. And maybe if after a little bit of time, you might consider them part of your inner circle.
And, you know, it's kind of referencing something you said earlier to me, but I found that sometimes it's the people who, I don't know how to say this without sounding rude, but the people who I'm super frustrated by or annoy me the most in some ways because they've got something I need that are the ones I actually need to reach out to. It's not the ones that I feel super comfortable with. It's the ones that make me uncomfortable for some reason.
Yeah. And you know what? In that discomfort, you might ask better questions. Whatever it is, it's about going and finding how do I expand my circle some to get me to give me an opportunity to be a reflection of something bigger than and greater than what I have today.
Don, this has been so fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing all this wisdom and insight around greatness. I highly encourage our launch readers out there to go get the books because these are not just incredible stories. I think they're things that we can implement today.
Tamara, thank you so much. What an honor. And I look forward to it. If anybody listening on this session actually would like, I can actually send a digital version of those, a list of those 16 characteristics. To anybody, if they'll just email me to don2@team180.com, don2@team180.com, and put your name in the or the name of the podcast, the launch podcast, in the database in the answer there or in the subject line. I'll send them that if it would be helpful to them.
That's awesome. Thank you. And if it's okay with you, we'll put that in our show notes on our page so that people have that easily to access.
Glad to do it. It's an honor to be part of your community.
Stop. Before you go, what did you learn today? More importantly, what's the one even tiny step you are going to take? So for me, it's a little bit of a mindset shift of seeing greatness, I think, as a pursuit and not as an end goal. I'm a bit of a goal junkie, and I got to really take a step back. I don't know that it always serves me. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love to know where I'm headed, but I think this idea of greatness as a pursuit and a daily thing takes a different bent to it. It's something I can actually do and think about every single day. And in fact, what I'm committed to doing is asking myself every day, did I work in pursuit of greatness today? In fact, maybe that's something I should ask in the morning. What am I going to do to work in pursuit of greatness today? I love it. And in fact, I can't wait to see how it goes. I think it's going to be good. So for you, here's what I want you to do. I want you to think about what you're in pursuit of. What are you trying to achieve? And then how can you think about that as something that you can do in the pursuit of greatness around it every single day? And then I want you to share. Because I love hearing your innovator stories, the dents that you are all trying to make in the world. It's so cool. And with that, Tamara out.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.